Chapter 4, and we're going to begin looking, cracked it open a little bit in our last session, at an example of this critical exhortation. They're all critical, but this will give you a flavor of how they all work, and just kind of picking one at random, this one here will suffice, because we've recently been through these things, and I said judgment and equity is where sonship really begins to shine, so I thought I'd show you the exhortation that surrounds you receiving this. Now, where this would properly happen as we go through sonship curriculum is when we get to, we could take a look at that. Just hold your place here. Flip over to the book of Romans. This goes with, let me see if I can jump to it. This chart here, yeah, that works pretty well. See where our curriculum is? Romans 13, 8 through 14. That's the doctrine of the sonship curriculum where we receive our basic initial fundamental instruction of godly judgment. And that's over here. I've been talking and not turning. My Bible almost snaps open to Romans. Romans chapter 13, verse 8. He says, "Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. For this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. If there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness." Dock at that in the back of your mind. "Let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof." Now, there's information that is in here that, and when we go over this, we'll describe it in further detail of, well, how in the world does that all fit into our godly judgment? Well, it does. And in fact, knowing the curriculum in advance where it occurs in Israel's program and the exhortations that surround it make a lot of sense out of what Paul's doing. Remember, what he's doing is he's establishing this skill of godly decision making when there is no real... That's one of the reasons why the things he brings up out of the law are brought up there, because they're guides that allows you to make determinations when there is no clear right or wrong to appeal to. There's no law or statute or regulation or rule book that you can rip open and say, well, that's the right and that's the wrong of it. But there's issues that have to be working in your inner man so that when you're confronted with various issues, you can determine, well, that's good, that's better, but that's the best one, and that's the path I'm going to go on. Now, with that in mind, and again, just dock it especially what he says there about the day being at hand, the night far spent, the day being at hand, cast off the works of darkness. Come back now to the exhortation that corresponds with this, back here in Proverbs chapter 4. And let's again just look at what David is going to exhort Solomon to before he gives him instruction in the godly judgment skill that he's about to receive. He says in verse 10 again, he says, "Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths." And I told you in the last session to notice all this is past. It couples. It takes what he has learned and is going to couple it with what he's about to learn. And granted, you're in level one, phase two of sonship edification. But even when you realize what's on the board up here and you see where judgment falls, you've covered. You've actually there's been a lot covered already in phase two of level one. Solomon's already received the forms of doctrine that make up his instruction of wisdom and his instruction of justice. And David exhorts Solomon as to what he's just covered previous to this when he says there, "I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. That's his instruction of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths. That's the instruction of justice. And that's all been covered by now. Now he comes on down here and he says in verse 12, when thou goest, thy steps shall not be straightened. And that's not straight. That's a different kind of straightened. This is straightened. Thy path shall not be straightened. By the way, that's the word that Paul will use later on when he talks to the Corinthians about having become straightened in their bowels. That straightened is a bad thing. That's not a good thing. Straightening in your bowels means that you're all cramped up. There's blockages. There's narrowings and restrictions, and there's some horrible things that have happened in there, and you're a mess. And this is telling him one of the great aspects of the information he's gotten in wisdom and justice and what he's about to receive in judgment. I have taught thee these things, and when thou goest, thy steps shall not be straightened, and when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. By the way, the word life here is talking... out of the major categories of doctrine, the category that we've been looking at in Romans 1 through 5, Romans talks about what? Justification. Romans 6, 7, and 8 is sanctification. If we're talking about what's going on in our sonship education, which one of those are we talking about? All right, so when he uses the word life here, what kind of life is it? Sanctified, functional life. That's exactly what he's talking about. She is thy life. She's your functional life now as a son in your father's business. And it's fascinating here that notice all of this is actually Solomon who knows now by what David says to him here, more instruction is coming. He tells him in verses 12 and 13, he tells that you're going to get more instruction now. And that when you go, your steps shall not be straightened. When you run, you will not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. You're going to get more of this instruction. This is what he's involved in. Every one of these four is instruction. It's the instruction of these four things. So he's, again, just the accuracy of that one word, instruction. That's what you're receiving here. And so, based upon what Solomon already receiving the benefits of the instruction of wisdom and the instruction of justice, based upon that past experience with that, and he's got some track record now, not a lot, but he's got some past experience with that, David comes along and says, now we're going to get more instruction that is advancing beyond the instruction of wisdom and justice. Those two are critical, they're absolutely necessary, they're not to be minimized. But the skill level you're about to get in judgment goes way beyond that. We're going to deal with judgment, and then we got equity coming right along behind that, and we're going to have advancement, and they're all going to have progress to them as well. But my point here is just to alert you to the fact that as far as the exhortation goes, the father, and in this case David, exhorts the son, Solomon in this case, the father is going to exhort the son to call upon the benefits of the doctrine that's already been received and already been perceived and is already being put into practice. That's the way a father exhorts. He goes back and calls upon the benefits of that. You remember wisdom, you remember justice, you remember all the benefits of that. And especially where the instruction of justice is concerned, David tells Solomon, I have led thee in right paths. We looked at the clear right and the clear wrong, and you've got a path you're following now. That is, Solomon now has his senses exercised to a degree. When you get through justice, you ever walk in a place and you say, this just feels like home. You get that's there's something happening to your senses. There's smells, you know, there's certain aromas when you were a kid and you used to bolt in the back door, you never gave a thought to. But when your mother had supper on the table and probably every other house in your neighborhood ate at exactly the same time. and probably had almost exactly the same meals, had exactly the same menus. And you would come into that door, and the smells and the temperature and things that you never even looked at, thought about, those become, they exercise your senses. They breed this sense of familiarity. And once you get through two of these, wisdom and justice, Solomon now has his senses exercised and to readily discern right from wrong, lawful from unlawful. And he has that because of wisdom and justice being properly taught to him. And of course, that's so that he can one day become a king and rule as a king. And from that, that's going to now parlay over into this third component to sonship decision making, judgment. And it's going to have the additional aspect to it of, now, son, you're not going to have such a eminently clear path to follow. And now you're going to have to take some additional information I'm about to give you that will allow for you to be able to determine on your own, to make your own determination of what is best or what is the excellent path to follow. You're not just going to be on a two-way road anymore. That's what you've got in verse 12. When thou goest, what you're about to get, when you go now, you're going to be going not just on a clear-cut two-way path, but now when you go, your step shall not be straightened, and when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. The issue now is the son has the ability to initially begin to walk in right paths. He has the ability to see a clear right from wrong path to follow, but eventually, as the son goes through his life, he's going to begin to, his path is not going to be the same all the time. It's going to start narrowing. It's going to start getting restricted at place. And that's the straightening concept of in verse 12. He's walking and that road starts to narrow. And there's going to be restrictions on that path. And he's going to have doctrine so that even though he's going down a path that seeks to that has all of these possible restrictions to it and possibly slow his walk down and slow his life down and bring it to a halt, this is going to make it so he's not straightened. He's not restricted. He's going to choose not that path with all that restriction. I'm going to choose the best one. I'm going to choose the most excellent one. And when he's walking on, he may come to a place. There's one in Raleigh. I think every town has them because most of the founders of towns can't quite see eye to eye. Every once in a while, you won't get an intersection of four. You'll get an intersection of five. And there are five forks, and it becomes a landmark. Five forks. It may fork out five different, six, seven, eight different directions. It's like Yogi Berra used to say, when you come to the fork in a road, take it. By the way, when Berra said that, in his head, that was right. And he was talking about where he lives in New York, because the road that he lives on will fork, and he lives in a place where no matter which one of those roads you go, it'll bring you around to his house. So he just says, when you come to the fork of the road, take it. Doesn't matter which one, it'll all bring you to his house. Well, anyway, I guess levity isn't part of this morning, but now all you're going to remember for the rest of the day is that Yogi Berra story and none of the rest of it. But when you come to areas where the road forks or branches into other roads, more than just two ways, right or wrong, the son's now exhorted to utilize this upcoming information, allowing for him for his steps to not be straightened, not be narrowed or limited. And this is huge in a son's thinking. When that son hears that, that ought to click something that he was told actually all the way back up there when he initially was adopted and declared as a son. The son's exhorted to utilize this upcoming information that allows so his steps are not going to be narrowed or straightened, limiting his range of motion or restricting his actions into having a hard, slugging it out type thing. About how the American troops did at Anzio. They slugged it out through these rocky, rugged, muddy, mountainous roads. And that you don't have to go down. What a wrong choice this ever was. And I've chosen some of those in my own natural life many times where you're scratching your head wondering, why did it ever come down this sorry road? And so the son gets exhorted to what this is going to allow him to do, so that his actions don't become a hardship because of other circumstances coming into the picture. To be straightened is to become restricted. And like I said, any son knows from the very time he was adopted, one of the biggest dangers to his sonship life is the loss of liberty. To go back to a restricted life like you had as a child. That things are going to happen to me that's going to try to snare me back into childhood. In other words, there's going to be an attempt for me as a believer in this dispensation of grace to get me back under the law. That straightens my steps. You see how that fits? Well, anyway, the loss of liberty as a son is one of his big worries, so to speak. And then you've got that expression, and when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. There's going to be circumstances that require you as a son to run. To make quick decisions so as to not stumble. Not all of them, but there's going to be a time where you're going to have to make a quick decision. You're going to have to run. And this is what the next category of doctrine is going to provide for. Well, what you've got now, you've got the father, David, exhorting his son that he's gotten some things in the past down pat. And that's great. And using them well. And then you've got David exhorting Solomon as to this present usage and the experience of the first two categories of sonship decision making. And so David takes the past, and on the basis of the past, David exhorts for the present. And on the basis of Solomon realizing that the present value of the doctrine, what that is, David now comes along and tells Solomon in verse 13, take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. And the instruction he's talking about here is the instruction that stills remaining future in level one edification. He's going to get judgment, and then he's going to get equity, just as he's gotten the instruction of wisdom and justice. And David goes on in verses 15, jump down to verse 15 here, and as he goes on, he actually is going to talk about the paths that Solomon doesn't have immediate light on. And he says, well, pick it up there at go ahead with verse 14. He says, enter not in the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it, and pass away. He goes on to describe, as he goes down through here, things that Solomon doesn't immediately have light on or immediately have clearness on, and that's where the receiving of judgment is all going to come in and fill that up. That's why he's pointing that out, where you're going to have to think. You're going to have to ponder. You're going to have to weigh what path you're going to take. So you get verses 14 and 15 there. Solomon already has got some familiarity with that. He's got some familiarity with the way of evil men. And he's got some familiarity with what you've got sitting there. But when you go on down, pick it up, come down to verse 18. Skip down. He says, but the path of the just is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. There's this path of the just. And notice the terminology. That's what you can be called now, because you've just gone through that. The path of the just, now that has done the job of the shining light. Getting the instruction of wisdom and justice, justice now has provided for a light to begin to shine as you go and look at path to path to path to path. And it's provided for so as to illuminate or provide for the ability to make the decision as to exactly where you're going to go. And this falls into line perfectly with the doctrine of the son, what he's going to receive in this third category of decision making, judgment. Judgment is going to build upon the shining way of the just that you just learned about. No pun intended, but it's going to build upon the shining way of what your godly justice decision making skills have given you. It's given you the light to now shine. And you're going to have to take that light of right and wrong, and you're going to have to light that path and take a look, light that path, take a look, like, and you're going to have to recognize what looks like a wonderful thing down there is actually, that's an evil man down there. Or this one down here, there's a strange woman waiting down here. There's impediments. It may look good to you, but through the discerning eye of a son who now has wisdom and justice on board, he's got this illumination. He has a light now that he can utilize. Well, what I'm after here is that you see that the way gets paved from one to the other, so to speak, by one form of doctrine, and the exhortations for that doctrine then are to be able to come along, to be able to be in a proper position as a son to receive the next form of doctrine. And there's going to be some added terminology coming up, and some added features to this next form of doctrine that will provide for that doctrine to now properly function in you, just as wisdom and justice is. And the exhortation to that future, soon coming form of doctrine gets underway, really, in verse 20. Look down here at verse 20. He says, "My son, attend to my words, incline thine ear unto my sayings." Notice that here, as we started, and I mentioned this before, in verse 10 and down here in verse 20, the terminology, if you've gone through these chapters, shifts to David's sayings. Again there, in verse 20, "My son, attend to my words, incline thine ear unto my sayings." David has talked about his law and his commandments, but now he talks about his sayings. And a saying is an encapsulation of information in a very particular way. And David ends up packaging together some information that form in the form of sayings. And the sayings are going to contain principles that are going to be utilized to be able to make these judgment-type decisions. And this is one of the reasons why that terminology shifts. Verse 21, "Let them," his sayings, "let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thine heart, for they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh." And he says in verse 23, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Notice the issues of life are the issues of his functional life in level 1, phase 2, that are going to be put on display now, and they're going to display his ability to think on his own and not to have a simple yes or no, right or wrong commandment to operate on. Now he's going to have to operate upon some sayings. And those sayings are going to give him information packaged in a way that when the light of justice looks down these various opportunities he has to live, it's not going to straighten him and snuff out his functional life. Because it's going to be really now in these sayings that are going to flow out from there the issues of his life. And Solomon's going to take these sayings especially, and he's going to put them in the midst of his heart, and they will be functional life to him and health to all his flesh. That's the wholesomeness of godly edifying. That's not just healthy in a physical way, but to all his flesh. And he's going to keep his heart diligently in just these sayings. But look at the marvelous way this comes up to an end here in verse 24. "Put away from thee the froward mouth." I don't have time to go into what froward means, but we've been through froward and untoward before. "Put away from thee a froward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on. Let thine eyelids look straight before thee." Look at verse 26. What's the first word of it? Ponder. That matches perfectly with judgment. Pondering means you're going to have to stop and think about it. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand or to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. To me, it's just fascinating. You've got in verse 26 there, ponder. That, when you ponder, that's the idea that you don't have any definite clear-cut path already marked out for you like you did in justice. In justice, you did. And you've got to stop and think and to ponder what path to take. That's a fascinating expression, because when you ponder something, you take all the information you have available to you and you start gleaning out of it what's pertinent to the situation facing you, and then you weigh the benefits of walking either this way or that way, or following this path or that path, based upon that information. You're pondering it. You've pulled out of it what's pertinent to this situation, and you're weighing it. And it's fascinating. And the way all this terminology matches up with the form of doctrine for judgment that the Son is now to encounter, to me, is really, it's so fascinating, because it's a perfect fit. It would be ridiculous to talk about you pondering something when you're talking about justice. There's nothing to ponder in justice. It's written down. That's right. That's wrong. That's fair. That's foul. That's safe. That's out. That's legal. That's illegal. But when you come to judgment, it's ponder the path of thy feet. And it's just amazing accuracy. And hopefully you can begin to see, as we've gone through this, the value and the importance of the exhortations. Also, you've seen the positive side of it. You've seen how this is going to benefit you, what you were benefited by, what you're presently benefited by, what you will be benefited by. But there's the other side to the coin. And that's what the end of this exhortation deals with. The future aspects of receiving the instruction of judgment go on in the opening six verses of chapter 5, because there's some things that Solomon is going to, on the other side of the coin, have to realize and be warned about in the exhortation concerning how, all right, you've got this, you're shining now. You've got an illumination. You've now come up on the radar screen of the adversary. You become noticed by him, and so now you're going to get some exhortation and warning about the policy of evil and how it's going to respond in kind, and that's how it does it. The policy of evil responds tit for tat, tit for tat. It responds in kind. And that's the rules of engagement that God the Father has set out for the policy of evil. In other words, it's not really until you get to this point that you even become a threat to the adversary. So all the Christians who have never gone through sonship edification that think Satan is after them because they were living in Atlanta and a tornado came through Atlanta. Well, tornadoes go everywhere in the springtime. Atlanta just happens to be one that they missed for a long time. So what I would learn from that is not that God hates Atlanta, but if you haven't been hit by a tornado in a long time, your number's coming. You know, it's just, to me, it's just that simple. And don't be surprised when it happens, you know, but that's just the nature of springtime in North America. I mean, it's a spiritual issue. One lady was screaming that she survived, and she said, "God was with me, God was with me." Well, he certainly wasn't with her house, evidently, because he splattered that all over creation. But anyway, the whole issue of the way the policy of evil is going to respond in kind to his instruction of justice has to come up. And the father has to tell the son this, and this strange woman now comes back up. She's already come up once before, but the son now has to realize, just because he wasn't victimized by her at first, he's got this far. So there's been some things that has challenged him a little bit along the way, not much, but he's going to be she's going to come along and shift her tactics. She's going to change in the way she starts wooing you and starts trying to seduce you. She's changed her tactics as well. She's going to be out there waiting for him. She's on one of these paths. And she's going to wait for him when all these multiple paths start appearing before him, and as he starts making godly judgments and equitable decisions and gaining some measure of what is going to be in phase two or level two, discretion. He's starting to get a little bit of that. She's going to shift her tactics tit for tat, in kind. Well, that didn't work. This will. Verse 1 of chapter 5. My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear unto my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. By the way, what is the only other time that expression or something near that expression is used for? Sharp. Yeah, it's a little bit different. Sharper than any two-edged sword. But this says sharp as a two-edged sword. What do you think she's going to begin using against you? The Word of God. Yeah. That gives you a heads up as to her tactic. She's going to say something to me out of the Bible in a very particular way. Anyway, verse 6, or verse 5, her feet, here's what's really going on. Her feet go down to hell. Her steps take, or go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable that thou canst not know them. Now, when the strange woman, and I'm going to give you in a class coming up, a little better understanding, or my understanding at least, of something more clear on the evil man and the strange woman. But for now, she represents that policy of evil, and she starts dealing with the son who has had some successes already. If he's gotten this far, he has had some success. And to withstand his initial encounter with her, as he starts getting into some advanced sonship decision-making skills, he finds out the policy of evil becomes more and more clever itself. It gets that much more sly and cunning, and that seductress comes back again. She's going to go away. Whoop, she comes back. She's dressed different, though, now. She's got different makeup on, but it's the same woman. And she may go away again, and she'll come back. And she's always coming back. And she's always shifting her tactic as you advance. And she's going to take that son who's had a little bit of success with her, and she's going to come back, and she's not going to employ the same approach or use the exact same words that she used the first time, because she got rebuffed. The son rebuffed her. So now she's going to use words, and that's exactly what the son is being told in the exhortation to look out for. He says, the lips of the strange woman drop as an honeycomb. Her mouth is smoother than oil. That's sweetness coming out of her mouth. By the way, this isn't a text to teach about whores. Just wanted to make sure that was clear. Well, actually, it is a particular kind of whore. It's a Christian pastor whore. But that's a different topic. Anyway, now that I've got your attention, she's going to use words. Words that drop as an honeycomb. And there's real sweetness to them. There's a real attractiveness to that. You're going to have to really be on guard, because she's waiting out there on some paths there. And what is it? When you have sweet words coming out and words smoother than oil, you ever heard about buttering somebody up or smoothing them out? What is she doing? What kind of words are they? Flattery. They're flattering. Like I said, you may think the old expression flattery won't get you anywhere is true, but that is not true in the policy of evil. Flattery can get you most anywhere if you know how to do it right. And there's going to be, there's flattery, then there's flattery. There's some things that somebody would flatter you and you'd say, oh, that's just flattery words. There's other ways, especially when they know you're hurting. And I don't mean hurting emotionally. I mean you may be hurting financially. And someone sidle up alongside of you, man, do you realize that you are one of the most effective? Your website is beautiful. You've got one of the most effective ministries, and you are an effective. Of course, nobody's ever told me this, but I usually get the opposite side. You're such a great teacher, and all, why don't you start? Come to our. We really need what you have to say, and you could be used in this conference and that conference and over here and over there, and people need to hear what you're saying. Well, and by the way, we'll pay you for it. You know, you're really, how many times, how would you feel if somebody came up to you right now in the current job you're at and say, just whisper to you and say, do you know you are grossly underpaid? You'd say, you know, I think you're right. Hooked you. See, there it is, hooked you. All they got to do is know what button to push. And there's real problems with all this, and I need to get this wound up, but she's sitting there and she's good at this. She's dealt with your types before. She's been successful with better than you. She knows how to do it. She knows exactly what to look for, when to change her tactic. And there's real danger in all of that. And she's waiting out there to flatter you and to seduce you from the best path, from the most, sometimes all she's got to do is seduce you away from the most excellent path. And just that little difference between what was best and settling for what is only better, or seducing you away from the excellent, just that little difference between good or best sometimes can make all the difference in the world to your functional life in the proper situation. Now, these exhortations, these are specific. They're doctrine specific. They're crafted specifically to a doctrine. They're not haphazardly done, and they won't fit other doctrines. They're doctrine specific. They're even specific to various components to the doctrine. Like I said, this is specific not to just the doctrine of receiving instruction, but specifically more than that, just the judgment part of it. And so they're even specific to various components within the doctrine. They follow the sequence of the forms of doctrine of the whole curriculum. Well, when you see all that, the value of these exhortations, listen, when you see, if you just see a tenth of what I've been talking about this morning, the value of these exhortations should be indispensable to you in your thinking. In fact, you should perceive that if you're being taught God's Word by a Bible teacher, you should right now perceive that if you're not getting a proper exhortation before the doctrine you're taught, you know you're not being taught properly. You're being taught improperly. And a pastor has to have just as much skill with the exhortation as he does in teaching the form of doctrine. And any teaching of the Bible and Bible doctrine that hasn't, first of all, provided the proper exhortation to give the son an advanced preview of, that's the first thing, of what the doctrine entails and why it's so important to get it, as well as the other side of the coin, to give the son advanced warning of how the opposition is going to be encountered. Any Bible teaching that hasn't done that first is just teaching an unformatted human spirit. That's all he's doing. He's teaching an uninitialized, unformatted spirit. And the doctrine will be, even if it's good doctrine, and a lot of it is, the doctrine will not be placed in the spirit where it ought to be in the son's inner man. It's not going to be put in the right place. It winds up being like a computer. To go back to that analogy, on it's like a computer. We got a guy back in the back there that's now big on Mac. So I'm not saying this whether you like Mac or you like PCs. I really don't care. To the illustration, it doesn't really matter. I got to use one. But it's like running a computer on one kind of an operating system, but God's running a completely different operating system. You both got computers, you're running entirely different. It's like trying to go out and purchase and buy software designed to run on a Mac when all you've got is a PC. Some data is going to get written on the disk for sure. There's going to be some data written there, but it's going to be unretrievable at times. That's not going to do you any good. You'll end up with a fragmented disk, or you won't be able to access the information. And You might possibly even crash the system doing that. Well, that's the only way in which, that's the danger of not following just the doctrine, but also the exhortations prior to the doctrine and even after the doctrine that initialize the human spirit, format it properly so it receives the doctrine, and that's the only way in which your thoughts are going to be thinking with God. It's the only way. And this is part of what it means. By the way, this ought to, I know we don't have any in here, unfortunately, but this is only a part of what it means to be A-P-T, apt to teach. This all had me, for a time, examining, I was going to quit. Because I was about to the point where I said, I know what it takes to be a pastor, and I'm not even qualified. I've been one for almost 25 years. I didn't understand the curriculum, and then I realized I didn't even understand the exhortations. And what you should realize, critical nature, I want to end this by running us real quickly over and just looking at a couple of things, just a couple more minutes, and you should realize the critical nature of the exhortations that correspond with the doctrine to be taught, because just as David exhorted Solomon when he said, for out of it, out of your heart, son, out of the son's heart, are the issues of life, up there in chapter 4, verse 23. The exhortation deals with not just the living words of the living God in general. That's to be understood and appreciated right from the outset of sonship edification. These are the living words of the living God in general. But you're dealing with these exhortations with those words living in you, the doctrine living in your heart, and makes it so that the decisions you make and the paths that you follow are the issues of life. And these issues of life are issues in the Son's qualifying for levels of responsibility in the Father's business as you go on through level 2 and level 3. And for Solomon, those issues of life, of his functional life, for him dealing with his Father's business of, you're going to be the King of Israel. That's why you need this doctrine. That's why you need that exhortation. And when it comes to the members, the remnant of Israel, you're going to be put into positions of authority over all the nations of the earth. And when it comes to you and me in this dispensation of grace, you're going to be put into a position of intelligence out there in the creature. Out of it are the issues of life out there. Well, as I said earlier, this whole exhortation here in Proverbs 4:10 through 5:6 is the exhortation that corresponds with us when we receive the instruction of judgment over in Romans 13:8 through 14. I just want to point out a couple of real quick things that ought to make this snap into your thinking, at least of how important this is and how phenomenally, intricately woven and geniusly put together our Bible is. It should come as no surprise that within that section, come over to Romans 8:13. Let's come back over there. It should come as no surprise in verses 8 through 14 that now comprise our curriculum for godly judgment. As we just looked at the exhortation, remember sitting in the exhortation, there's going to be this strange woman, and out of her mouth there's going to come words. Her lips are going to drop like honey, the honeycomb. So it should come as no surprise somewhere in Romans 8, 13 through 14, we better find there ought to be something said in there about the strange woman. Some doctrine that corresponds with that exhortation. And it should come as no surprise to find that within the body of information that actually deals with our curriculum, it's at this point in the sonship education where the son, for the first time, is going to meet up with some real heavy opposition from the adversary's policy of evil. And in fact, that's exactly what you find. Look in verse, that's why I said, docket it in the back of your mind. Verse 12. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. You're going to have to, there's battle now. You're going to have to do battle with an adversary. And you're going to have opposition. And the son is exhorted. By the way, he's exhorted in advance of this opposition. In fact, he's already become acquainted with one of the main areas of resistance. And he's, like I said, he rebuffed her. He rebuffed it. One of the main areas of resistance in opposition to his sonship life was told him back in chapter 12. Look in chapter 12, verse 2. That ye be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, what you may prove, what is so forth and so on. But what I'm after here, there is the conformed to this world. That's the first time the son is going to really be confronted with the evil man. In chapter 12, verse 2, and he's going to have to encounter for the first time in a very real sense the opposing, by the way, I don't have time to go into all of this, but he's going to have to encounter for the first time to opposing and threatening of his sonship life, that strange woman. His functional life is going to be threatened down there in verse 12 of chapter 13. That's why it says the works of darkness. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness. And he mentions, let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting, drunkenness, chambering, wantonness, not in strife and envying. One of the ways the policy of evil can work, and one of the very first ways in which she'll do this, she's going to utilize, and this is why you're told in chapter 12, verse 2, about the being not conformed to this world. The world, and I'll talk about this in maybe in our next lesson, the world is not the strange woman. But she can use the world. And in fact, she can use the world without the world knowing she's using it. The evil that's presently within the world is usable by her, and that's why in that doctrine there in chapter 13, you don't have things that she's saying in a flattering way. That's not her first tactic. Her first tactic is to use things like rioting, drunkenness, chambering, wantonness. That sounds like things of the world. It is. But she has them specially crafted to try and trip you up. When that's rebuffed, she shifts her tactics. And you already know in advance what she's going to do. She's going to shift from that to what she says. Her lips are going to drop as a honeycomb. And she's going to have to change that. In fact, you're told, like I said before, back in the book of Proverbs, before you even got out of phase one, level one, you were told there for the first time that the strange woman existed, that you're going to encounter her, and you were told exactly what her number one main weapon she'll use against you as a son will be. And we won't go look at it, but in Proverbs 2:16, he says that the strange woman is one which flattereth with her words. So you know in advance that ought to be coming up. Do you think it does? You'll find that very thing happening and confronting the son as he rounds out his level one education, which is what he's doing right here. He's rounding it out. Come to chapter 16 of the book of Romans. And come down to verse 17 and 18. That's all I have time for. Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ, but by their own belly and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. There it is. You can almost see the dripping honeycomb when you read that. And by the time you get there, that son has been not only forewarned through the exhortation, but he's now got this entire form of doctrine with its wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity all operating, and she's going to ramp up that thing to where what she says is going to shift from just mere flattery, but it's going to be flattering Bible doctrines that's going to attempt to deceive you. And that's why he talks about it the way he does. Mark them which cause division and offenses contrary to the doctrine. They're going to teach contrary doctrine. You see how she's shifted? She started out with grabbing things of this world and trying to seduce you with them. It didn't work. Then she starts using certain types of flattering words, and maybe that's rebuffed. But then she shifts that just slightly with more flattering words, fair speeches. And by the way, did you catch this? There's a certain amount of, what's the very last word of verse 18? What are you by that time? You're told in Proverbs chapter 1 in the table of contents that by the time you get to the end of the book of Romans, you're going to be a simple son. There's the word simple right there. And you are going to be in a position where you are vulnerable for that kind of an attack. And what this is doing is allowing you to put that information that you have to use and to actually utilize this information and this doctrine and this ability that you now have in your sonship life to make these decisions, so that when you're confronted this way, you know that somewhere down the line, I'm going to be confronted with doctrinal corruption. Somebody who is really good and really slick and really wonderful, and I want to just appeals to me in every way to be around them, are going to try to start slipping corrupted doctrine in. That's why you shift now to one of the more sinister levels of her flattering words. Because she's going to do it with corrupted doctrine, contrary doctrine, which is contrary to the doctrine which you have learned. Avoid them. They serve their own belly. By good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. Well, that's a very brief look and a sketchy look at one exhortation and how it plugs in and fits together with the doctrine, how it carries you through the doctrine, and even has aroma, pleasing aroma and pleasing aftertaste after the doctrine has been ingested, that has effects later on here in the 16th chapter. I hope you see the awesome, perfect weaving of this together is unbelievable. It's just a fascinating issue to see how all of this, it fits. It so perfectly fits. Well, we'll stop right there and we'll pick this up on Tuesday night. And the other one isn't going to take nearly this much time, but a question is, well, what exactly do you mean by the evil man? What exactly do you mean by the strange woman? I might talk a little bit about that, but I want to show you one other example of a very brief exhortation out in level 2 that also has some, that'll start making connections back, say, in the book of Colossians, and where that fits together. Because when you're in Colossians, you're in level 2. And where that exhortation takes place, just as the one we looked at snaps here in Romans, that one will snap with Ephesians, Philippians, and especially the book of Colossians. Just as an example of how your Bible is put together. That book you have in your hand has more power to it than you can imagine. But anyway, we'll stop right there and pick it up Tuesday night.